Chapter 10, Obedience to the Truth.
Dear Brother D., I recollect your countenance among several others that were shown me in vision in Rochester, New York, December 25, 1865. I was shown that you were upon the background. Your judgment is convinced that we have the truth, but you have not as yet experienced its sanctifying influence. You have not followed closely the footsteps of our Redeemer. Therefore, you are unprepared to walk even as he walked. As you listen to the words of truth, your judgment says that it is correct. It cannot be gainsaid. But immediately the unsanctified heart says, "These are hard sayings. Who can hear them?" You would better give up your efforts to keep pace with the people of God, for new and strange and trying things will be continually arising. You will have to stop sometime, and you may just as well stop now and better than to go further. You cannot consent to profess the truth and not live it. You have ever admired a life consistent with profession. I was shown a book in which was written your name with many others. Against your name was a black blot. You were looking upon this and saying, "It can never be effaced." Jesus held his wounded hand above it and said, "My blood alone can efface it. If thou wilt from henceforth choose the path of humble obedience and rely solely upon the merits of my blood to cover thy past transgressions, I will blot out thy transgressions and cover thy sins. But if you choose the path of transgressors, you must reap the transgressor's reward. The wages of sin is death." I saw many evil angels surrounding you, seeking to divert your mind from Christ, causing you to look upon God as a God of justice, and to lose sight of the love, compassion, and mercy of a crucified Savior who will save to the uttermost all that come unto him. Said the angel, "If any man sin, we have an advocate with the Father, Jesus Christ the righteous." When you are under the pressure of mental anxieties, when you are hearkening to the suggestions of Satan and murmuring and complaining, a ministering angel is commissioned to bear you the succor you need and put to shame the language of your unbelieving mind. You distrust God. You disbelieve in his power to save to the uttermost. You dishonor God by this cruel unbelief and cause yourself much needless suffering. I saw heavenly angels surrounding you, driving back the evil angels and looking with pity and sorrow upon you and pointing you to heaven, the crown of immortality, saying, "He that would win must fight." Although you have been in doubt and perplexity, you have not dared to entirely sever the connecting link between yourself and God's commandment-keeping people. Yet you have not yielded all for the truth's sake. You have not yielded yourself, your own will. You fear to lay yourself and all that you have upon the altar of God, lest you may be required to yield back to him some portion of that which he has lent you. Heavenly angels are acquainted with our words and actions, and even with the thoughts and intents of the heart. You, dear brother, fear that the truth will cost you too much, but this is one of Satan's suggestions. Let it take all that you possess, and it does not cost too much. The value received, if rightly estimated, is an eternal weight of glory. How little is required of us! How small the sacrifice that we can make in comparison with that which our divine Lord made for us. And yet a spirit of murmuring comes over you because of the cost of everlasting life. You, as well as others of your brethren at blank, have had severe conflicts with the great adversary of souls. You have several times nearly yielded the conflict, but the influence of your wife and eldest daughter has prevailed. These members of your family would obey the truth with a whole heart, could they have your influence to sustain them. Your daughters look to you for an example, for they think their father must be right. Their salvation depends much upon the course which you pursue. If you cease striving for everlasting life, you will exert a powerful influence to carry your children with you. You will bow down the spirit of your faithful wife, crush her hopes, and lessen her hold on life. How can you, in the judgment, meet these to testify that your unfaithfulness proved their ruin? I saw that you had several times yielded to the suggestions of Satan to cease striving to live out the truth, for the tempter told you that you would fail with the best endeavors you might make, that with all your weakness and failings it was impossible for you to maintain a life of devotion. I was shown that your wife and eldest daughter have been your good angels, to grieve over you, to encourage you to resist in a measure the powerful suggestions of Satan, and through your love for them you have been induced to try again to fix your trembling faith upon the promises of God. Satan is waiting to overthrow you that he may exult over your downfall. Those who are trampling underfoot the law of God are strengthened by you in their rebellion. It is impossible for you to be strong until you take a decided stand for the truth. Systematic benevolence looks to you as needless. You overlook the fact that it originated with God, whose wisdom is unerring. This plan he ordained to save confusion, to correct covetousness, avarice, selfishness, and idolatry. This system was to cause the burden to rest lightly, yet with due weight upon all. The salvation of man cost a dear price, even the life of the Lord of glory, which he freely gave to lift man from degradation and to exalt him to become heir of the world. God has so ordained that man shall aid his fellow man in the great work of redemption. He who excuses himself from this, who is unwilling to deny himself that others may become partakers with him of the heavenly benefit, proves himself unworthy of the life to come, unworthy of the heavenly treasure which cost so great a sacrifice. God wants no unwilling offering, no pressed sacrifice. Those who are thoroughly converted and who appreciate the work of God will give cheerfully the little required of them, considering it a privilege to bestow. Said the angel, "Abstain from fleshly lusts which war against the soul." You have stumbled at the health reform. It appears to you to be a needless appendix to the truth. It is not so. It is a part of the truth. Here is a work before you which will come closer and be more trying than anything which has yet been brought to bear upon you. While you hesitate and stand back, failing to lay hold upon the blessing which it is your privilege to receive, you suffer loss. You are stumbling over the very blessing which heaven has placed in your path to make your progress less difficult. Satan presents this before you in the most objectionable light, that you may combat that which would prove the greatest benefit to you, which would be for your physical and spiritual health. Of all men, you are one to be benefited by health reform. The truth received on every point in this matter of reform will be of the greatest advantage. You are a man whom a spare diet will benefit. You were in danger of being stricken down in a moment by paralysis, one half of you becoming dead. A denial of appetite is salvation to you, yet you view it as a great privation. The reason why the youth of the present age are not more religiously inclined is because of the defect in their education. It is not true love exercised toward children which permits in them the indulgence of passion, or allows disobedience of parental laws to go unpunished. Just as the twig is bent, the tree is inclined. The mother should ever have the cooperation of the father in her efforts to lay the foundation of a good Christian character in her children. A doting father should not close his eyes to the faults of his children because it is not pleasant to administer correction. You both need to arouse, and with firmness, not in a harsh manner, but with determined purpose, let your children know that they must obey you. A father must not be as a child, moved merely by impulse. He is bound to his family by sacred, holy ties. Every member of the family centers in the father. His name, house band, is the true definition of husband. He is the lawmaker, illustrating in his own manly bearing the sterner virtues, energy, integrity, honesty, and practical usefulness. The father is, in one sense, the priest of the household, laying upon the altar of God the morning and evening sacrifice, while the wife and children unite in prayer and praise. With such a household, Jesus will tarry, and through his quickening influence, the parents' joyful exclamations shall yet be heard amid more exalted scenes, saying, "Behold, I and the children whom the Lord hath given me." Saved, saved, eternally saved. Freed from the corruption that is in the world through lust, and through the merits of Christ made heirs of immortality. I saw that but few fathers realize their responsibility. They have not learned to control themselves, and until this lesson is learned, they will make poor work in governing their children. Perfect self-control will act as a charm upon the family. When this is attained, a great victory is gained. Then they can educate their children to self-control. My heart yearns over the church at blank, for there is a work to be accomplished there. It is God's design to have a people in that place. There is material there for a good church, but there is considerable work to be done to remove the rough edges and prepare them for working order, that all may labor unitedly and draw in even cords. It has hitherto been the case that when one or two felt the necessity of arousing and standing unitedly and more firmly upon the elevated platform of truth, others would make no effort to arise. Satan puts in them a spirit to rebel, to discourage those who would advance. They brace themselves when urged to take hold of the work. A stubborn spirit comes upon some, and when they should help, they hinder. Some will not submit to the planing knife of God. As it passes over them and the uneven surface is disturbed, they complain of too close and severe work. They wish to get out of God's workshop, where their defects may remain undisturbed. They seem to be asleep as to their condition, but their only hope is to remain where the defects in their Christian character will be seen and remedied. Some are indulging lustful appetite, which wars against the soul and is a constant hindrance to their spiritual advancement. They constantly bear an accusing conscience, and if straight truths are talked, they are prepared to be offended. They are self-condemned, and feel that subjects have been purposely selected to touch their case. They feel grieved and injured and withdraw themselves from the assemblies of the saints. They forsake the assembling of themselves together, for then their consciences are not so disturbed. They soon lose their interest in the meetings and their love for the truth, and unless they entirely reform, will go back and take their position with the rebel host who will stand under the black banner of Satan. If these will crucify fleshly lusts which war against the soul, they will get out of the way, where the arrows of truth will pass harmlessly by them. But while they indulge lustful appetite and thus cherish their idols, they make themselves a mark for the arrows of truth to hit, and if truth is spoken at all, they must be wounded. Some think that they cannot reform, that health would be sacrificed should they attempt to leave the use of tea, tobacco, and flesh meats. This is the suggestion of Satan. It is these hurtful stimulants that are surely undermining the Constitution and preparing the system for acute diseases by impairing nature's fine machinery and battering down her fortifications erected against disease and premature decay. Those who make a change and leave off these unnatural stimulants will for a time feel their loss and suffer considerably without them, as does the drunkard who is wedded to his liquor. Take away intoxicating drinks and he suffers terribly. But if he persists, he will soon overcome the dreadful lack. Nature will come to his aid and remain at her post until he again substitutes the false prop in her place. Some have so benumbed the fine sensibilities of nature that it may require a little time for her to recover from the abuse she has been made to suffer through the sinful habits of man, the indulgence of an acquired depraved appetite which has depressed and weakened her powers. Give nature a chance, and she will rally and again perform her part nobly and well. The use of unnatural stimulants is destructive to health and has been a benumbing influence upon the brain, making it impossible to appreciate eternal things. Those who cherish these idols cannot rightly value the salvation which Christ has wrought out for them by a life of self-denial, continual suffering and reproach, and by finally yielding his own sinless life to save perishing man from death.